Welcome to the Payment Your Own Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And on today's episode, we're going to be looking at synthetic ID. And more specifically, we're going to be looking at synthetic identification fraud. And so to help me with this conversation, I have David Barnhard, who is the Chief Experience Officer at GIACT, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisor Group. Now, in addition to looking at synthetic ID fraud, we're also going to be discussing some of the best practices that organizations should take to help combat this growing problem. So without any further delay, let's start the show.
Synthetic fraud has been growing at an incredible rate lately. Synthetic fraud is identified as the combination of real and fake identity information to create a new fake identity. And synthetic fraud and account takeovers are driven by the availability of consumers' personal information, which has been made available online based on hacks and releases of information by corporates and government. Almost half a billion records were exposed in 2018. And that data trove is used by criminals to establish new identities, false identities, and create takeovers. They use that data to try to find user ID passwords, to spoof customer service, and also to create the synthetic identities that open up new accounts. So in part, this new drive towards synthetic fraud has been driven by EMV, which has reduced card fraud significantly, and the fraudsters and criminals are now starting to look at new ways and new areas where they can penetrate and make a profit. So fraudsters will either profit quickly, they'll open up an account using a synthetic identity and immediately cash out on that, or sometimes what they'll do is build up a credit rating on that account over time to establish higher and higher credit ratings, sometimes piggybacking, which is taking other criminals and adding them to the account to help others be able to establish a solid credit line, and then bust out all at once. So about 50% of synthetic identities utilize piggybacking. And if you have a chance and are interested, it would probably be good to go take a look at the recent publication from the Federal Reserve, the Payments Fraud Insights of July 2019, which describes one such criminal ring, which had a network of more than 7,000 synthetic identities, and they fraudulently obtained more than 25,000 credit card accounts. So this is a serious problem. It requires a new way of investigating customers and potential customers to make sure you can recognize and cut off this type of identity theft.
So thank you, Tim and David, for joining me on today's episode. Now, GIACT recently published a white paper titled The Cost of Synthetic Identity Fraud, and this report opens up with a number of compelling statistics, and I'd like to rattle off a few of those statistics for our audience here, and then if we could, during this discussion, let's unpack them. So for the first stat here, I've got 446 million consumer records were exposed in 2018 data breaches, and that's a 126% increase from 2017. There's 14.1 million consumers were impacted by ID fraud in 2018, and there was an estimated $14.7 billion stolen. And now minors are especially vulnerable, with 40% of synthetic identities are stolen from children born after 2011. So, David, if we could, you know, given these alarming stats, what do you think the impact will be for consumers and businesses moving forward?
You know, the statistics are telling me we still have a very pervasive and growing problem in this country with identity fraud. Fraud operators are becoming increasingly more sophisticated in how they carry out synthetic identity frauds, and they've effectively figured out the weaknesses that they had in their process, and they have now fortified them very rapidly and very quickly. Case in point, as you mentioned earlier, 2019 Federal Reserve Payments Fraud Insight Report stated that as many as 85 to 90% of synthetic identities were not flagged as high risk by existing fraud models. This is a very telling statement that the traditional identity verification solutions are simply not working.
Yeah, true, David. And no small part of the challenge is the recent change by Social Security Administration to eliminate the keying of Social Security numbers to geography and other information, which was often used to verify individuals and validate them. So this problem is going to become, as was pointed out, even more severe for the younger generation that have these new randomized Social Security numbers.
Excellent. Now clearly we're talking about one of the problems or the challenges here with synthetic identity fraud. So for this next part, it's a little bit of a multi-part question, but I'd love to get from you, David. Let's start off by defining the challenge with which synthetic identity fraud is presenting for banks, businesses, and consumers. And then also, how is the industry currently coping with this challenge?
You know, synthetic identity fraud at its core is a means for a fraud operator to effectively steal goods, services, or money. In each one of these categories, the criminals have mastered the process to optimize their payday. You know, let's start with banks as an example. Synthetic identities are still opening credit card accounts. You know, there's nothing new there. However, now they are building tenure with these accounts. They're making purchases and making payments, and they're building enough credibility and aging the account long enough to obtain higher credit line increases. And, you know, when they get those higher credit limits, that allows for a bigger payday when they orchestrate the bust out. You know, really, the second part of that, businesses, they're losing out somewhat instantaneously. The fraud's payday here is typically a physical object or a service. Let's use telecom or mobile network operators as a great example here. They may ship 4 smartphones and several tablets to a prospective customer who in turn really doesn't exist. And not only that, they never make a payment on the service or potentially even the hardware. Even if they do make a payment, and this is where it gets kind of interesting, even if they make that initial payment, typically that is an account that is fraudulently obtained, typically credit, which ultimately goes back and to the bank as a non-payment situation. So if you think about the waterfall approach, the bank gives the card, they use the card, they never pay the card, the bank has a loss, the telecom has a loss. And then, you know, lastly, the consumer. The consumer could be really the one that has to clean this mess up, because there could be some type of collection or some type of demand payment on their reported to their credit. They could also become aware that their SSN, or that the SSN of their child, was used to fraudulently open an account. It's real difficult for a consumer to clean these situations up, since they don't really have a lot of intelligence to go on other than what's on the report. So they're starting from ground zero. They're seeing a charge off from an in particular institution, and they're having to go back and really prove that that was not them, that something was used without their knowledge. And the sad thing is, if a child's involved, they're typically not going to find that out until that child gets to the age of potentially applying for student loans and other things. You know, anywhere you turn regarding synthetic identity fraud, it racks up costs, especially when you have to deal with it as the consumer, as the financial institution, or as a company that is shipping out goods or services.
Yeah, it actually kind of upset me that in that Federal Reserve paper, they made the statement that it creates emotional costs for the individual and financial costs for the financial institutions. And I thought, that's just absolutely wrong. It's not just emotional. The individual also has financial problems in that they're unable to get the loan they need. They may be unable to get a mortgage. They're being locked out of the financial world because of criminal activity that linked them to fraud activity by organized crime rings or even by state actors. So it's a serious problem.
All right. So clearly, as we've talked about quite a few times on this episode, you know, clearly it's a big problem here. You know, kind of citing back to that original data point that we put out there, that there's 120% increase from 2017 to 2018. So now I'm really curious, given that this is such an enormous problem here, David, what is GIAC doing differently to solve for this problem that the current industry is not doing?
You know, our G-Identify product is unique on many levels. First and foremost, we deal in the world of absolutes. We like to say that the devil is in the details. Traditional solutions may key on just a few data points. However, to detect today's more sophisticated identity crimes, the employment of detailed traditional and non-traditional data elements is a must. Our data points are triangulated across numerous diverse sources to ensure not only the accuracy, but the timeliness of each data point. For example, GAIA's identity solution can confirm a user, or could confirm rather, one of our users, that the social security number being used for a specific identity belongs to someone else. The data elements like address, date of birth, email, phones, all these things must line up to what is truly associated to the real individual. You know, another indicator is our, you know, to our customer or that our customers have success with is the deceased indicator. It is alarming how many fraud attempts are orchestrated daily where the identity being used, or in this case, the SSN being used, is being reported that that individual has passed away, that they're deceased. Having the identity signature of a real person to compare to takes a lot of the guesswork out of synthetic identity fraud and even true name fraud. If you think about element for element, we like to say that we create the digital DNA of a consumer or a business. In this case, let's look at the consumer. You know, with that DNA, DNA is a strand that's typically locked in and it is what it is. But when the fraudsters go in there, they can't really replicate that DNA down to, you know, the non-traditional elements, if you will. This is where when you start looking at a more sophisticated ring, they could use different pieces of information that clearly don't line up to a verifiable individual. In the event of a true name fraud, if they're using the person's real name, the person's real address, their real social, their real date of birth, you'll see that the only two ways they want to be contacted are via a different cell phone number and a different email. And again, those two pieces of DNA don't line up to what has tenure with that real individual. You know, it really just takes a lot of the guesswork out. And we've even taken that a step further. The Geoidentify persistent monitoring allows our users to stay up to date when things change. What's happening with their customer portfolio? You know, this helps them to provide better customer experience, in turn, reduce the number of declines they may have. And it also keeps the fraud out of the downstream process, if you will. We always talk about customer touch points. You may have a very fortified enrollment process, but then, you know, the fraud tactics and the fraud detection kind of go out the window once that customer is established. And a lot of these fraud operators have realized that they can come in at a later point in a process with an existing customer and actually perpetrate a fraud. So again, it's not only the reactive part of identity verification and detection, but it's also the proactive piece, which is the monitoring of the people that you know they are who they say they are. Even if you let someone in the front door that effectively could be a synthetic identity, if, you know, there's fraud reported or that identity is reported as fraudulent, that could be a notification that could pop up later on. So again, if there's a balance here of both proactive and reactive, and you know, we keep striving to really push the industry to get to a fact-driven data approach. Sure, it's fine. Go ahead and ingest those into the models and things, but you just give it a lot more granularity and a lot more information to make the best decisions possible.
Yeah, I agree with that, David. It really comes down to having the ability to analyze verifiable and accurate data that's available pretty much in real time. Criminals are going to try to do a bust out, so you need to know what's going on right this instant. And that data needs to look at both physical items about that individual as well as their digital footprint. And the broader and more accurate that data is to analyze, the better off the analytics can be in detecting the fraud.
Excellent. Now, if we could, for the last question here today, I'd like to leave our audience with some action items that could potentially be done today. So, David, could you outline for our audience some of the best practices to help prevent synthetic identity fraud for businesses?
Yeah, I would start off with heightened awareness and identity validation is a must. Fraud operators think out of the box, so should businesses. Traditional detection solutions simply aren't working as well as we would hope. You know, businesses must employ the use of a data-driven, fact-based decisioning approach. You've got to augment your existing solutions to make them smarter. You know, having a mix of traditional and non-traditional data elements is really one of the true ways to know who you are dealing with and know if that person you're dealing with is effectively a real person or not. Fraud operators can't hide when businesses employ this type of data-driven analysis. Think of it, you know, again, as the digital DNA of a consumer. Fraud operators can't mimic it, or they can't mimic but so much of the DNA before they're discovered. Getting back to fact-based decisioning, looking at every element and really not taking any data point for granted. I mean, sad to say that we're in that position today in this market, but, you know, we have to employ the best tools and services we can at the same time, keeping up with the customer experience, keeping the false declines at bay. I mean, this is a really tough balancing act for a lot of companies. But, you know, again, the more companies that employ this fact-based decision approach, whether it's ingesting that into their existing models, running it as a side standalone solution with tactical or strategic rules, they are finding that they're having better successes. They're able to approve more transactions. They're able to stop more fraud. That reciprocates. That then in turn decreases the losses. It can decrease the expenses. But it's about a balanced identity management approach with both reactive and proactive.
Yeah, I agree, David. You know, detecting fraud using static rules simply won't work against these types of criminals. And in fact, it's an ongoing battle to stay ahead of the crime rings. They're starting to use machine learning tools themselves to try to create these synthetic identities. And so it's imperative that if a institution or a merchant has significant risk associated with these bogus accounts, then they better get serious about applying some really high-level machine learning tools, behavioral biometrics, and other tools to detect and prevent it.
So, David, I'm curious to get from you if perhaps you could share with us a little bit of a success story of somebody implementing your product and the results that they may have seen.
Sure. One of the companies that was really looking to improve their enrollment process, they had roughly a 72% approval process. And out of that 72%, the remaining percent was kicked over to analysts to be able to manually look up individuals trying to obtain documentation and verify identities. You know, once they implemented our solution, that 72% turned into around a 94% instant approval rate, which did a couple of things for that company. Number one, it allowed them to get their product and service out to those verified individuals quicker. Thus, they started making money faster. They also had expense reductions internally where they didn't have to have as many analysts trying to track down individuals and effectively shuffle paperwork and verification information back and forth. So it has a lot of tangible benefits, not only from a fraud reduction perspective, but an instant approval, getting your product or service in the hand of your customers quicker, allowing them to transact faster. It, again, these things are reciprocal. So, you know, a byproduct of doing really good analysis at the front door and understanding people, understanding their identities and getting those approved is obviously reducing expenses, making a tighter process, and then a byproduct of that is just simply reducing the fraud.
Excellent. Well, thank you, David and Tim, for taking the time today for speaking to us about the cost of synthetic identity fraud, and I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.